Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. We're listening to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, the passionate show that helps you take control of your health. And probably no place is that more important than in making sure you get the food you actually think you're getting. Larry Olmsted is a great writer and a great author. This book is called Real Food, Fake Food, Why You Don't Know What You're Eating and What You Can Do About It. It's what you can do about it that's most important. Mr. Olmsted, thanks for coming on. This is a sensational book. One of the things that got me into this field was the story you have about, if you will, Red Snapper. And the chance that when you order Red Snapper in a restaurant, 94% of the time you're not going to get Red Snapper. And in fact, a few percent of the time you'll get tilefish, which is banned in the United States. So tell us how you got started on this and what we can do about it.
Well, I've written on travel and food topics for newspapers and magazines around the world for over 20 years. And when I travel, I've always made it a point to try to eat in locally, not in, you know, in terms of the kind of cuisine, eating wherever I go to get a feel for the place. So I've had the pleasure of going to places like Japan and Italy, where the food is exceptional. And then often I would come back to the United States and try to enjoy some memorable dish I had had again at home, and often it proved impossible to do. I went to Japan and had the famous Kobe beef, probably the rarest and most expensive beef in the world. It looks very distinctive, tastes very distinctive, nothing like our kind of Western-style beef. And then when I came back and ordered it a few times on menus here, it never looked or tasted right. I looked into it and found out that at the time, the importation of Japanese beef was completely banned in this country by the USDA. So every single restaurant in the country claiming to serve Kobe beef, and there were hundreds, was lying. And I wrote an article about that for Forbes. It proved immensely popular, and that sort of started me down this road of researching the fake food topic.
And now the fish topic is one that's particularly interesting to me. We always say we want fish fats, and the only fish I saw in the United States that consistently have DHA, the key fat, are salmon and ocean trout, because those refuse to eat corn and soy meal. But the rest of the fish story is really interesting. So talk to us about fake fish or fish that are mislabeled.
Sure. Well, there's really two parts to it. One, since you mentioned salmon, one common fraud in fish is substituting farm for wild caught. Americans have shown a clear preference, especially when it comes to salmon, for wild-caught salmon, and are willing to pay more because it typically costs a few dollars a pound more than farm salmon. Yet, when Consumer Reports did a study of and bought wild-caught salmon at retail and supermarkets, more than half the time what was labeled and sold for a higher price as wild-caught salmon was actually still farmed. So, you know, and a farm salmon, as you mentioned, gets fed a diet of grain, which is not, you know, just like our cattle do, which is natural to neither animal. And so, you know, people are going out of their way to spend more money and try to eat healthier and really being cheated when it comes to that. But the bigger area for seafood in general is what's called species substitution, where, you know, you order one kind of fish and get something completely different. That doesn't really happen with salmon because salmon is distinctive looking, but most of the fish we eat are whitefish, and when you fillet a whitefish, they all look the same. So very common for people buying the highest priced white fish, which would be things like red snapper, grouper, cod, to be sold farmed tilapia or other very much lower priced fish. I just read one recent study where, you know, the substitute being pawned off costs 1/9 what the fish people thought they were buying was. And this is very common. Nationwide, the biggest study, both retail and restaurants all across the country, fully a third of the seafood in this country is mislabeled. I mean, that's an immense amount. But because cheaper fish tends to be labeled accurately, the problem is much worse with the higher value fish. And as one researcher told me, never order red snapper. You're not going to get it.
And in fact, one of the, in the USDA tests, as I understand it, a number of samples for DNA across the country every month, and they found that 94% of the red snapper wasn't. And in fact, in one of the samples was tilefish, which was in fact a banned fish in the United States because of its high mercury content. What can we do until we get, as one of the hopes of the Pokemon phone, is that you'll be able to take a picture of something and get the DNA of it and be actually able to shop much better 2 years or so down the line. But until we get there, what can we do?
Yeah, there's a number of scientists working on these handheld scanners for everything from fish to cheese to other products, and they are coming. And then, you know, I think first there'll be scanners in stores you can use, and then eventually in your phone. But for seafood in particular, for wild-caught seafood, there's an organization called the Marine Stewardship Council that provides third-party certification. So they basically license their label and in turn validate where the fish came from and what it is. So they're sort of like a good housekeeping seal of approval for wild-caught fish. And their logo is a blue fish in the shape of a check mark that says MSC, Marine Stewardship Council. And that's something I recommend in the book people look for when buying retail, especially that's the kind of thing you'll find on bags of frozen fish. And it was just studied by worldwide, the accuracy of this MSC label, and proved to be 99.4% accurate. So that's really good. And there's a similar one for farmed fish, the Global Aquaculture Council's Best Aquaculture Practices seal, BAP. So if you're buying something like catfish or tilapia, that's something you want to look for. I also recommend buying fish from Alaska, especially salmon. I mean, that's where almost all of our wild-caught salmon comes from anyway, but there is no aquaculture in Alaska. It's banned by state law, so all the fish, whether, you know, they're crab or pollock or whatever you're buying, is wild-caught. The fishery is extremely clean in terms of the water, and Alaska does a good job of enforcing their logo, which is, it says Alaska Natural, Pure, Sustainable, and so that does not have to be on all fish from Alaska. So not seeing that seal doesn't mean it's not from Alaska. But if you see that seal, it probably is. That's a good bet.
One of the things I like to do is, in fact, I buy a bunch of salmon burgers, which are just salmon put into a burger shape, at Costco, which is all Alaska salmon. So it's the overage of the Alaska salmon run. Mm-hmm. And it's very inexpensive. Is that is that real Alaskan salmon, or am I being fooled?
Well, so much to the surprise of many people who've read the book, the big box stores, Costco, BJ, and Walmart in particular, do better than supermarkets in terms of the authenticity of seafood. They typically buy very large volume from a handful of regular vendors versus just buying on the open market. And as such, they're able to really dictate terms of quality control. I know in the case of Walmart, they basically told all their seafood vendors, we've identified a few of these third-party certification processes. You have to be in one of them. All your products have to be under one of them within, I think they gave them 3 or 4 years, or we're not going to buy from you anymore. And when BJ's or Costco or Walmart tells you that, you're going to meet their standards. On the organic front, the same thing has happened. There's a lot of produce I'd rather buy there than at the supermarket.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about how you do this with olive oil, with wine, and with cheese, and see if the solution's the same. We've been talking to Larry Olmsted, the book Real Food, Fake Food. It's realfoodfakefood.com is the website. You can also get it on Amazon. It's a wonderful book, great stories, and incredibly important, great solutions. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual radio show on Radio MD with more from Larry Olmsted on Real Food, Fake Food, why you don't know what you're eating and what you can do about it, and what you can do about it in restaurants too. We'll be right back.
And And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike Roizen, and we're back. This is Podcast 401. We're back to Larry Olmsted, the great book, Real Food, Fake Food. RealFoodFakeFood.com is a way you can find out more about it, or, of course, at Amazon. Why you don't know what you're eating and what you can do about it. And before we went to break, I promised I wanted to get to oils such as olive oil and truffle oil, wine and champagne and scotch and cheese. But also, what do we do about this if we're in a restaurant? Larry, so I'm in a restaurant, and they're trying to, obviously, I choose salmon, but they're trying to get me to choose halibut. And halibut's one of those more expensive white fish that are often mistaken, and they usually will provide tilapia or something else in its place. What do you do?
Well, restaurants are harder because even the laxly enforced labeling laws we have at retail don't apply to restaurants. Most consumers don't really realize restaurants have pretty free run to exaggerate and defraud them with their menu claims. As far as seafood, also 70% of the seafood we eat in this country is eaten out in restaurants, much higher than other kinds of food. So we're particularly vulnerable when it comes to that. The thing is that, you know, to serve high quality seafood like red snapper or wild caught Alaskan salmon, you have to have a pretty good seafood distributor. You can't just order the boxes of frozen fillets the way your pollock or your tilapia comes in, or your fish and chips. So I always ask, you know, who's your seafood distributor? And if they don't, you know, you don't have to memorize the name of every seafood distributor in the country. But if the waiter or the chef doesn't know, that's a really bad sign, because they have to be, you know, making an effort to source quality fish to get it. So if they turn around and say, oh, we get it flown in 3 times a week from ABC Seafood in Sarasota, Florida, that's a good answer. If they say, oh, we don't know, or it comes with our, you know, cabbage, that's a bad answer.
Yeah, now I actually look at the boxes in towards the trash heap, because they usually have these frozen boxes if they come in frozen. Is that a reasonable way of doing it, or is that totally outlandish?
Yeah, I mean, I think most consumers, to be honest, aren't going to go poking around the dumpster. but I think the other thing is whenever possible, you want whole fish. Now, you know, you're not necessarily going to order a whole fish, but when you go to a lot of high-end seafood restaurants, they do actually have whole fish. You might see them displayed on ice. They might have a cart. Other times, the fish is served with some of the skin on it. It's just the more processed it is from its natural form, the less recognizable it is to you, especially if it's just a white fillet under a pile of sauce. You have no idea where it came from. It's always better if you can see some semblance of the whole fish.
How about olive oil? Now, recently we saw 9 out of the 10 major Italian distributors were under indictment by the FCC, or FTC, for having vegetable oils instead of extra virgin olive oil mixed in with their extra virgin olive oil. How do we know what we're getting in a restaurant, and how do we know what we're getting in a at home?
Well, I haven't seen that particular FTC indictment story, but you know, olive oil has a long, rich history of fraud, of being cut with cheaper oils, of being stale, all kinds of things. So, restaurants are tough. I never use that when they put out like a bread and a little bowl of oil for dipping. That is typically very low quality. I never use that. When you eat at ethnic restaurants, especially Greek restaurants, tend to have, you know, very good olive oil that they'll source from Greece. I recently actually ate at a Uruguayan steakhouse that brought in their olive oil from Uruguay. South American olive oil is very good. I'd be very wary of it in sort of any kind of a mid-market restaurant like a fast casual. But at home, I mean, olive oil is by far the healthiest oil that's widely commercially used, heart healthy, lots of other benefits. I use a lot of it. I want people to use a lot of it. It's delicious. You have to be very careful, but there are a lot of things you can look for when buying it. Better quality oils will have on the bottle, on the label somewhere, either a pressed on or harvested on date, and that's really what you want to look for. That's sort of the first thing, because olive oil is all about freshness. It's basically fresh squeezed fruit juice. You crush an olive, you get olive oil. All of the other oils we use sunflower, peanut, canola are all seed oils. They last a very long time. Olive oil is very fresh. It does not last a long time. So you want it to be recent. You want that pressed on or harvested date to be like 6 to 9 months ago at the most. You know, olive oil only lasts about a year. But what a lot of bottlers will do is they'll put a bottled on date, and that's a big red flag because that's typically to deceive you because that doesn't mean anything because especially in Europe, they'll hold the oil in a metal tank for a year and then put it in the bottle. And so that bottled on date doesn't mean it was fresh then. Also, use-by dates are pretty much useless when it comes to olive oil. There's no standard. The manufacturers put whatever they want on sometimes 2 or more years out. So you want to look for that harvested on or pressed on date. Or there's some other particular seals I list in my book. Like if you're buying from California, you want to look for this California Olive Oil Commission 100% certified extra virgin mark. Buying from Italy, you want to look for 100% Qualità Italiana. It's a higher standard. There's a lot of sort of third-party and special labeling things I list to look for. And once you find a good olive oil, you know, supply in a store near you, you can just keep buying it.
And in fact, the olive oil from California and I understand Spain, Turkey, and Greece is really tends to be very good. Is that right, or have I been misled?
Well, I mean, Spain is the largest olive oil producer in the world. They have some very, very good oils. One oil from Spain kind of consistently wins all the gold medals, but there's a lot of different ones. Greece makes excellent oil, but Italy also makes fantastic oil. The problem with Italian oil is we get very little of it here. Italy is the largest exporter of olive oil in the world, but they're also the largest importer. So they buy a lot of oil from any place that makes it, put it in batches, put it in bottles, and put bottled in Italy on it, which is technically true. But, you know, when you go to Italy, you can have some fantastic olive oil. And I'm going in 2 weeks, and I always bring some back. But I'm a little wary about buying Italian olive oil in this country. And then people, you know, don't realize that the Southern Hemisphere oils, Australia has the highest legal standards for olive oil in the world. They make fantastic olive oil in Australia. Also, Chile, like I mentioned, Uruguay, Argentina. Chile would probably be the largest producer. That's what I'm using right now in my house is Chilean olive oil.
What about champagne and scotch? You have a great chapter entitled The Sincerest Form of Flattery.
Right. Well, one big problem with the sort of the fake foods across the board is these foods that are known as geographically indicated foods, you know, which are come from a particular place. Like champagne would be the most famous example. Everybody knows champagne is supposed to come from the Champagne region of France, but it doesn't always. In this country, it's legal to make champagne domestically and label it such. So you have to be very wary of these wines like Champagne, Burgundy, Chianti that you think come from a particular place, but often don't. I use scotch as an example of sort of the perfectly labeled real food. Scotch gets special protection from Congress, can only be applied to whiskey from Scotland, so it's one of the few things that when you buy scotch whiskey, you're always getting the real thing in this country.
We're running out of time. The great book is Real Food, Fake Food by Larry Olmsted, Olmsted, realfoodfakefood.com or amazon.com. Sensational book. What you don't know, why you don't know what you're eating, and what you can do about it. You've heard a number of examples. There are many more in the book. Great book. Thanks very much. We'll be right back on Podcast 402.